You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
You know, Jesus never shied away from working against those primal human responses in his teachings, and today's passage from Luke is no exception. In this excerpt from what is essentially Luke's version of the Beatitudes, Jesus starts out with what you and I would recognize as the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. But then he can't leave well enough alone. He muddies up a perfectly harmless platitude with a clarification. You know, he says, this includes your enemies. What? Hang on. That's a little more than I signed up for. I thought this would be a harmless reciprocal arrangement. But if you're including my enemy, how will I ever get paid back? Those people are insufferable. But Jesus says, too bad. Do it anyway. And then adds, expecting nothing. Then Jesus urges his listeners to be like God, no less, being kind to the ungrateful and the wicked. Jesus doesn't try to give any rationale for his divine eccentricity. God is God, and God will do what God will do. More than anything, Jesus calls his listeners to imitate God's penchant for doling out unmerited mercies and for being generously, irritatingly compassionate.
Our words of wisdom are from Luke chapter 6, verses 31 through 36, the Message version. Here is a simple rule of thumb for behavior. Ask yourself what you want people to do for you. Then grab the initiative and do it for them. If you only love the lovable, do you expect a pat on the back? Run-of-the-mill sinners do. If you only help those who help you, do you expect a medal? Garden variety sinners do that. If you only give what you hope to get out of it, do you think that's charity? The stingiest of pawnbrokers does that.
I tell you, love your enemies. Help and give without expecting a return. You'll never, I promise, regret it. Live out this God-created identity the way our Father lives toward us, generously and graciously, even when we're at our worst. Our Father is kind. You be kind.
Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
It wasn't unusual for a Mullah Nasruddin to be challenged to a debate. And on one occasion, a philosopher, having made an appointment to dispute with Nasruddin, arrived at the appointed hour and found Nasruddin away from home. Nasruddin had completely forgotten their plan and was, in fact, in a tea house playing table games and telling stories with his friends. After waiting for quite a while, the philosopher grew angry, and picking up a piece of chalk, he scrawled, "Stupid oaf!" on Nasruddin's door, and left in a huff. As soon as Nasruddin got home and saw this, he rushed to the philosopher's house. I'm so sorry for not having been home. I completely forgot our appointment, he said. Of course, I remembered the appointment as soon as I saw that you'd left your name on my door. Who is it that stretches your capacity to love? To be compassionate? The poor? The immigrant? The cruel politician? The judgmental preacher? The sick, or the ugly, or the angry, or the forgetful? Whatever. Do you find yourself suffering from that oh-so-American of ailments? Compassion fatigue? When we find ourselves growing impatient, tempted to scrawl something on the wall in frustration, will what we scrawl say more about our deepest insecurities than anything else? Could the teachings of Jesus we have the most trouble with be a glimpse into our own psyches? In today's passage, Jesus says, "Do unto others as you would have them do unto you." But he knows that we will immediately try and make it easier for ourselves. So he immediately adds the fly in the ointment admonition. You know, this does mean loving your enemies too. Do good, lend to them, expecting nothing in return. Look, God is kind to the ungrateful and the wicked, so go and do likewise. Be merciful, be compassionate. He said, what? Clearly, Jesus didn't have to live in today's world. He's being totally unrealistic and naive. I can't live like that. Good thing I just have to believe in Jesus and not actually do what he taught. I mean, that would be totally impractical and maybe even irresponsible. But is it? Remember, Jesus was not a teacher of either correct beliefs or right morals. In fact, he opposed the holiness code embraced by some of the most religious Jews of his day, who emphasized, "You shall be holy as I, the Lord your God, am holy." And remember, to be holy means separation from everything that would defile a person. And then we're just back to that dualistic thinking that religions thrive on. Clean versus unclean, Jew versus Gentile, righteous versus sinner, pure versus defiled, sacred versus secular. Instead, Jesus offers an alternative. Forget holiness, he says. Be merciful, as God in heaven is merciful. The root of the word merciful, oiktero, is to have compassion. So instead of holiness, instead of separation, Jesus did just the opposite. He embraced all, the outcasts, the unrighteous, even the Gentiles. He invited people to transcend the conventional wisdom of his day. So he healed on the Sabbath. He dined with sinners and outcasts. He told stories that made women and Samaritans the heroes and demonstrated a compassion in his relationships that transformed the people around him. This was the essence of Jesus' ministry, actions that embodied the true meaning of the word compassion, which in both Hebrew and Aramaic is the plural of the singular noun for womb. That's right. Jesus is suggesting that God is, and we should be, womb-like. The womb, nourishing, life-giving, and sustaining, a visceral, tangible expression, the very idea of compassion. Now, let's be clear what compassion is not. It's not charity. It's not pity. Compassion is not the kind of patronizing generosity that is so often what we offer to those who are less fortunate. No, compassion is a deep and intimate engagement with the other. It's coming to the realization that God's grace is manifested in the most unlikely of places and circumstances. And Jesus told stories that forced his hearers to wrestle with his teaching until they realized that the only way they could resolve the tension they were feeling was to face their fears in busting down walls, crossing barriers, and overcoming the conventional wisdom that imprisons most of us even today. If you're writing a check to support a ministry somewhere, great. But until we personally cross that line that we haven't crossed before, pushing through the prejudices and discomforts that hold us back from really engaging with people who are totally different than us, then we will never truly know the transforming power of God's grace. Let me give you two examples. Judith Brain is a UCC pastor in Massachusetts, and her son is a jazz musician. Judith tells a story about her husband going with her to hear their son's band one night in a club in Roxbury. She writes, "It was a warm, interracial friendly spot. At the table next to ours, a big friendly African-American man attended to a tiny, twisted human being on a wheeled cart. A paralyzed man with a puppet's body and a large, misshapen head lay on the cart, sipping his beer through a straw and watching the musicians attentively. He seemed alert, but only his eyes moved, so it was hard to tell how much he really took in. His friend captured our attention. He seemed alive to every nuance of this poor, deformed man. He leaned close to hear him speak in that noisy club, and his manner proclaimed love. I thought about how wonderful this scene was, the club that embraced this broken person. I felt part of that embrace. I too was reaching out in some way with a friendly smile. I accept you, I was saying. Well, the room was smoky and my contact lenses were giving me trouble, so I popped them out, I sloshed them in my water glass, and I put them back in. In a few minutes, the tall man came over to our table and gave me a bottle of eye drops. Here, you need this. Oh, thanks, I gushed. You noticed. No, my friend did, he said, pointing to the man on the cart. On that crooked face was a big grin. He took pity on me. I came out of my pharisaical fog. I accept you? What presumption! I thought I was whole, and he was not. I thought I was the giver, and he was alien. The last person in the world who could help me. But the tables were turned. That twisted man in the jazz club became an unexpected source of kindness, of compassion. We need to get over ourselves and the idea that God will love us more if we are nice to those with special needs, or that we do good, or that we believe the right stuff. In our passage today, Jesus clearly says, expect nothing in return. Where grace really happens, where we experience an authentic glimpse of the divine, is in very humble and very human circumstances, in that spark between two human beings who are genuinely engaged with one another, in truly coming to know one another, in fostering trust, and where there's been misunderstanding, limping towards reconciliation. Matthew Fox reminds us that it's not about feeling sorry for people. Meister Eckhart says, compassion is just another word for justice. It's about creating circumstances of fairness and equality and balance so that rivers of wisdom and joy can flow through our hearts, through our communities. Sounds good, right? No, not if you're a conservative politician or evangelical Christian. And this is my second example, the one that I have the biggest challenge with. Love your enemies. There is a growing chorus of politicians and preachers across our country who seem to have a special talent for not only stoking fear, but for bringing out the worst in others. They thrive on chaos and division. Also, they can amass more power for themselves, and most of it in the name of their idea of holiness. And right now, their number one focus is a frenzied anti-woke campaign vilifying diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives. What are diversity, equity, and inclusion, or DEI initiatives? They're exactly what we just heard Matthew Fox define as compassion. Efforts to create circumstances of fairness and equality and balance so that rivers of wisdom and joy can flow through our hearts and through our communities. Let's be clear. These blowhard politicians and preachers are dangerous, and they're working exactly against what Jesus is advocating for. They are opposed to including people of different races, genders, sexual orientations, abilities, or religions in their organizations or in the community. They are opposed to fairness and justice, could care less about whether people feel like they belong, feel heard, or feel valued. And not to put too fine a point on it, they are advocates of principles that align with historic white supremacy. They are the enemy of compassion that Jesus tells me I'm supposed to love. Our very own new Arizona superintendent of public instruction was elected spouting blatantly racist promises to protect people from this fantasy boogie monster of critical race theory, counting on the fact that most of his voters don't even know what it is, so they could be manipulated into voting their fears. He is the enemy of compassion that Jesus tells me I'm supposed to love. What are we to do with that? Let me ask you this. In our workplaces, schools, and institutions, do you think Jesus would be against diversity, equity, and inclusivity, or for diversity, equity, and inclusivity? If you said against, let me introduce you to a little book that I like to call The Bible. Maybe you ought to consider reading it sometime. And yes, what I'm saying is that despite draping themselves in Christian flags, a good number of these misogynist, racist, anti-LGBTQ, book-banning politicians and preachers are, in fact, profoundly anti-Jesus. And yet these enemies of compassion are exactly the ones Jesus says I'm supposed to love. Back in 1966, Martin Luther King Jr. faced a mob of opponents while marching for fair housing in Chicago. As he led several hundred peaceful demonstrators through the Marquette Park neighborhood, they were met by a crowd of thousands of mostly white segregationists, frothing with hate and screaming racial epithets. MLK kept marching. Rocks and bottles were thrown, and one hit MLK in the head. He went down on one knee, wiped the blood away, got up, and kept marching. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw a group of white teenagers jeering at him. King ducked away from his security detail, walked right up to them, and said, "You're all so smart and good-looking. Why would you want to stoop so low?" King truly believed what Jesus taught, that we are all created in the image of God, and that love is the only force capable of changing an enemy into a friend. Jesus, why do you have to make this so hard? We have to love even those who are working against including the poor, the immigrant, the sick, and the scary, even the misogynist, racist, anti-LGBTQ, book-banning, anti-Jesus, culture warriors. Ah! Every day, as a follower of Jesus, I have to remind myself that I am called to go beyond being open even to those who seem unlovable, to being open especially to those who seem unlovable or who are actively working against my efforts to live into the kingdom. Why? As Muslim interfaith activist Eboo Patel says, "When people are at their worst, our enemies and our friends, we all lose. When people are at their best, our enemies and our friends, we all win." So, with those who are excluded, and those who are doing the excluding, with those who are hated and those who are doing the hating, with those who are experiencing injustice and those who are withholding justice, there is only one way to move forward with the maddening and impossible ideal of compassion as our guide. My friend Paul Eppinger used to tell the story of being in Jerusalem and seeing two young women happily making their way arm in arm through the cobblestone streets of the old city, chatting and giggling as they went along. The only thing more remarkable than the fact that one was clearly Jewish and the other a Muslim was that one was blind and the other crippled. The young woman who was crippled could not walk without the assistance of her blind companion. The blind girl could not find her way without the eyes of her crippled companion. Despite all our differences, we need one another. Our collective future depends not only on our genuine compassion toward one another, but that we love our enemies, even when we don't like them very much. As MLK said, let no one pull you so low as to hate them. Compassion is Jesus' alternative to holiness. An obsession with holiness only leads to exclusion and hate. Instead, Jesus told us to do unto others as we would have them do unto us, and that we do so expecting nothing in return, save for the opportunity, like Jesus, to be kind. Yes, even the ungrateful, the wicked, and the enemies of kindness. Be compassionate, Jesus says, just as our Creator is compassionate. Wake up, church! This is not a task for the faint of heart, but it is undeniably, irrevocably our task here and now. May compassion be our guide and our goal. Be well.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.